What up, everybody? It's your boy Joel, live from Nairobi. Was traveling, went to Jinja, Uganda for the Nyege Nyege Festival, which was off the chain. But I'm back, and today I have a very special guest. Her name is Yasmin Bello Osagi. She is the co-founder of She Leads Africa. She is on the line from the mean streets of Boston. Yasmin, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Joel.
Thank you so much for being a guest. From what I know, from what I've learned about your organization, you guys do great work. When I told my girlfriend who I was interviewing, she was like, "What? You better be prepared." I was like, "All right, all right."
Oh my gosh, thank her so much.
Can you talk a little bit more about what She Leads Africa is about?
Definitely. So She Leads Africa, we are an organization that kind of helps millennial African women build the businesses and careers of their dreams. That's, I guess, like the quick tagline. But I think kind of why we started the organization is because, I mean, myself and my co-founder saw, you know, two trends that were happening on the African continent. So one, we were seeing kind of much more focus on kind of, you know, startups and entrepreneurship, and you were seeing so many accelerators and pitch competitions going on. But we would go there and we'd see that it tended to be dominated, you know, by guys. And then on the flip side, you had a lot of organizations that were thinking about, you know, okay, yes, we know that when you empower a woman, you empower a family, and so many people were focusing on African women. But it tended to be a very heavy focus on kind of, okay, well, how do you help sort of, you know, low-income women set up essentially, you know, businesses that are just helping them survive? So it was a lot of focus on, you know, micro-entrepreneurship, you know, microfinance, much more small-scale business. And so we kind of noticed a gap in the market for organizations that were really focusing on women who, you know, if you're in the professional space, you're like, well, I don't want to just get a job. Like, I want to be the bank CEO, right? Or if you're building an organization, it's, well, I don't want to just build like a small, you know, store. I want to build like a national, a regional, or even like a global business. So we really created She Leads Africa to kind of support that demographic of women. You know, our typical community member is somewhere between the ages of 18 to 35, tends to be kind of be lower middle income and above. You know, most of them are urban, you know, tech savvy, and really about kind of, you know, how they build their, you know, businesses into, you know, regional powerhouses, or if they're in the, you know, professional space, how they really reach top leadership in whatever organizations they go into.
Wow. So basically you kind of wanted to expand outside of the, you know, the small microcredit in some rural village somewhere. You wanted to kind of help people who wanted to really bust through on larger projects.
Exactly. And I think it's not to say that we don't think those micro enterprise initiatives are important. I just think it was really important for us to understand, or I think it was really important for people to understand that, you know, African women aren't one block, right? Kind of what a woman who is in, you know, a rural farm needs is very different to like a young woman who I've gone to university, but I'm still finding it hard to kind of, you know, reach those or scale the heights of the professional world.
Right.
That there is enough room kind of in the ecosystem for people who are doing different things, like, you know, the people who are doing the micro enterprise and business, continue doing your thing. It is so needed and it's so worthwhile, but kind of that is not the complete picture of African women, and we need to make sure that we're supporting all different types of African women and acknowledging that we all have slightly different needs. And the one thing I always say to people is that, well, you know, this micro entrepreneur who you're supporting, you know, she's going to save money, she's going to put her kid in school, you know, she's going to send her kids to university, and then what happens after the child comes out of university?
Yeah.
Like, they don't want a micro loan, right? You know, they want to work in an office with an AC, and like, who's building those businesses that is going to hire like all these graduates? I was always like struck, I remember, by this story that I heard about Dangote, who's, you know, one of the richest men, or is the richest man, in Africa. And he put out a job education, or he put out, a job application for lorry drivers. And about 50% of the people who applied, like, had a university degree. Like, you had PhDs applying, you had people who had masters. And, like, that's a ridiculous situation to be happening, right? That we don't have enough organizations that are creating jobs for people who are coming out of university, such that I would have gone and spent I don't know how much money getting my PhD, and then I have to become a lorry driver.
Uber driver nowadays.
Exactly. And I think it's particularly important because, like, at the end of the day, I think education is a promise, right? The whole idea is that your parents, like, save and send you to school so that you can have a better life. And if we as a community, I don't think, deliver on that promise by creating jobs that are worthwhile for university graduates, then that promise is going to be broken. And, like, if I'm kind of like a, you know, young woman, I'm sitting in, like, a village, I'm like, well, why would I send my kid to school if I send him to school and at the end of all of that, he comes out and becomes a lorry driver, or he or she?
Exactly.
Right? Why not just pull them out of school, go get a driver's license at 16 and, you know, start driving the lorry?
Sure. Let me ask you this, and I'd love to hear from the perspective of an entrepreneurial woman who is from the continent. So my background is really in international development. And one thing I hear a lot about projects or initiatives dealing with women and girls is that you have to get the buy-in from men, as they are always perceived as the elders or leaders. Do you kind of face the same situation in the entrepreneurial world where you're not in that necessarily that medium we're talking about, where you are, you know, very poor and coming from, you know, somewhere very rural versus kind of being from an urban environment where you've had access to education. Do you still kind of see those types of gaps or challenges, rather?
I mean, I think that buy-in from men will always, I think, be important to the extent that they do hold a lot of the power. I mean, if you're a young entrepreneur and you're a young female entrepreneur and you're looking for funding, you know, most of the bankers tend to be guys, right? Most of the investors tend to be men. So there does have to be some level of buy-in, and that I think that we do have to shift male perspectives and having them believe and understand that I think, you know, women are investable. We can build businesses that can grow and scale. But on the flip side, I think I'm a really big believer in kind of building women's networks. I think on the continent, you're having an increasing number of women in, you know, senior leadership, whether they're in organizations or women who are building businesses. And I do think that, you know, we have to make sure that we also tap into them. I think that everyone always talks about the old boys network. Well, it's like, well, why can't we build our young women's network or our old women's network and actually work with each other and support each other? And so I think I'm a really big believer in that as well. I think that the two have to come together. Of course, like, you know, it's not something that we're going to ignore. But I think it's also really important for us to think about how do we foster connections and relationships between kind of more senior, more established women and kind of younger women who are up and coming.
Gotcha. So let's talk a little bit about some of the things She Leads Africa does. One of the things I've read about are the opportunities you present to young women, to kind of give them the opportunity to talk about what they want to pitch. Can you talk a little bit about that? I mean, some of the showcases I know of are, the Entrepreneur Showcase and the Pitch Hive. Can you talk a little bit more about those?
Yeah, for sure. So I think that when we came to thinking about, okay, you know, we started off from a mission, right? It's like, okay, well, we know we want to, like, empower young African women. So, you know, how do we do that? And I think that we tend to think about it in terms of, like, a life cycle. And, okay, well, what are the different intervention strategies that we can make at different points in time? And I think that that's really informed how the organization has evolved. So I think we were thinking, well, okay, I'm like a young woman, I'm going ahead with my day, I want to start a business, or I'm like struggling at work and I just want more information and want to see other people like me. And so for them, we were like, well, you probably don't necessarily want something super high touch. You just want something like simple and easy, and it's very easy to access. And so that's when we started, I think, really building up our kind of digital media platforms. So, of course, you know, we're on all the social media platforms, you know, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, but also our website, SheLeadsAfrica.org, where we were really thinking about, well, how do we actually provide young African women with kind of information and inspiration in a very accessible way? And of course, like, I know I say accessible within quotes because I do understand that not all people have access to internet, but we've tended to focus on people who do.
Right.
And so on SheLeadsAfrica.org, what we really focus on is providing locally relevant information. Understanding that, you know, when we were building our business and I wanted to find out about, you know, social media marketing, like, so much of the content was coming from, like, the US or, like, the UK, and it wasn't particularly relevant to my local context or my environment. So we have about 80 contributors across the continent who contribute content. You know, these are people who have built businesses, people who are professionals, who create content for our community in a way that you know that it's actually locally relevant and applicable to, you know, the space where you're at. I think on the digital media side, we also wanted to think about, well, how do we use different types of media to interact and engage with our audience? I mean, you know, we're like millennials, so yes, sometimes we want to, you know, read articles, but we also want to think about, you know, long form downloadable guides, right, where it's like much longer and focused on one topic. So we do those. You know, we also host webinars. We're thinking about podcasts, and we're really thinking about, well, how do we actually provide information to our generation in a way that our generation actually wants to consume it? So you'll see that if you actually go onto like our website, we try to, the tone of it is very young. Like, we use memes, we use GIFs, and the whole idea is really presenting the information in a way that it actually makes sense for you as a young, you know, 25, 26, 27 year old, 18 year old. And then I think, okay, well, we moved away from the website and we're saying, okay, well, you go onto the website and that's cool. That'll give you a little boost of inspiration, your little information. But then you'll get to a stage where you need a little something that's a little bit more high touch, right? Something where you want to start meeting other women like yourself. Because if you're building a business, it can be a very lonely, you know, journey. And so that's why I think we started thinking about our in-person events. I think the most well-known of them is, you know, the SheHive, which is kind of standard, like, four-day boot camp. First few days are long workshops, so they're three-hour workshops led by myself and my co-founder. And then over the weekend, we invite, you know, outside speakers to present on particular topics. I think we shied away from kind of calling it a conference because I felt like I'd go to all these conferences and, you know, it would always be this very high level, like, chase your dreams. And I'm like, I'm ready to chase them, but, like, what do I actually do?
Yeah, give me some tangible, right? Tangible skills on how to do this.
Exactly. Like, please, like, can you tell me how, can you talk to me about distribution? Can you talk to me about leadership skills? Can you talk to me about how to, like, negotiate my salary? Like, I don't know how to do that.
Right. How to make this money, pretty much. How to get paid.
Exactly. And so, you know, we really were focusing on bringing in kind of subject matter experts and having them focus on that. So, you know, we've had ladies like, you know, the CEO of Airtel in Ghana, who is coming and really speaking about, well, how do you actually build a career in a very, what is a very male-dominated environment? Mm. Or, you know, we're doing the SheHive in Lagos, and we have the guy who used to be the managing director of L'Oreal talking about distribution, right? So, like, how do you actually get your products to these customers in this environment where logistics is such a challenge? I think aside from kind of giving people access to these mentors and teaching them tangible business skills, also helping them build a network of other young women who can support them.
Right.
I mean, we've had some great stories whereby, I mean, one of the entrepreneurs who came out of our pitch competition, which I'll talk about later, she came and spoke at our SheHive in New York. And she was actually raising money at the moment. And one of the ladies who was in the audience actually ended up investing in her business, right? Or when we were in Accra and we had an entrepreneur who was saying, well, she was really trying to get the word out there about her business. And there was another lady who had a PR company, and they've actually gone on to start working together. Mm. So we've been thinking about, well, how do we start building these networks between young women whereby, you know, these are people who could be your partners, who could be your suppliers, who are people who you can come together and, you know, do business and make good money with. And really thinking about how we do that in an environment that is casual, that is informal, and that it's fun, right? So at every SheHive, we open it up where we split people up into groups, and you have to come up with, like, a freestyle rap about why, you know, you're a really amazing African woman, right? Because we wanted to make it fun, you know? I believe that, like, learning canon should be fun. And it's like one day you just got old and you went to all these conferences and you have to wear suits. And I'm like, this is just not fun. Like, I don't want to be here.
Right. You want to remove the stuffiness. You want to make it more relaxed.
Exactly. Exactly. And really make it, I think, of our generation. Mm-hmm. No, I was going to say, well, then the last piece of us was that, well, okay, you know, you're someone who, you wanted something, you know, low touch, easy to access. You had our website. Then you come to an event, you know, you're starting to build your business. You're starting to get some traction. And then we were like, well, there are some people who, you know, there are going to be some really special entrepreneurs who are like, yo, I'm really ready to like scale and just like take this global. And for those people, of course, we then have our pitch competition or the Entrepreneur Showcase, which we've actually transitioned this year into a 3-month accelerator program.
Wow.
And every year we take, you know, 10 entrepreneurs. I mean, people apply. So each year we'll probably get about 400 applications, you know, from about, I think, 40 different countries. And, you know, we'll choose the 10 best and kind of work with them. And then kind of at the end of that process, you're able to kind of pitch their businesses to an audience filled with, I mean, we try to invite, you know, angel investors, VC investors, people who are really interested in this entrepreneurship space, and giving these young women a platform to pitch their businesses and the ideas to these people. And I think that we've been really excited, as I said, started off with a pitch competition and now have transitioned it into a 3-month accelerator program. Mm. But an accelerator program that's, I think, really designed for women. I think the well-known accelerator programs like, you know, Y Combinator or, you know, 500 Startups, it's like you have to go to like Silicon Valley or the West Coast for like 3 months. And for us, like a lot of our pitch competition applicants like had kids. Right. So it's like, well, I can't go.
Yeah.
Right. Even if my business is amazing, like it's just such a barrier to me unless I'm going to come and you're going to provide childcare.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually designed a system where it's like, okay, well, you only come for a week every month. So a week every month you're with us. We do very intensive training. And then the rest of it, we actually do stuff offsite where we check in with you a couple of times a week, give you kind of one-on-one mentorship and coaching. I remember at our last, you know, we call them residencies, like, you know, one of the ladies actually came with her kid. And so, you know, we went and found someone to provide childcare for the week, right? Because I think that, you know, we've realized that a lot of systems are just not designed for women. So if we're going to say, okay, we want to like empower some of, you know, the 10 best female entrepreneurs in Africa every year, we have to make sure that we're designing something that really takes, I think, their particular needs and situations into account.
Right.
So that's kind of how we thought about like the whole organization and kind of all the different, you know, pieces coming together.
Yeah. So you kind of have to kind of keep in mind of reality of many people's situations in order to really give them the opportunity to excel at this. Is it primarily for people who speak English? Are you able to present these opportunities to women from Francophone Africa?
Yeah, so right now, mainly it's Anglophone, and it's not something that we're happy about, but my French is very basic at any stages. But, you know, the plan for us is definitely to go Pan-African, and I think we're continuing to think about, well, how do we engage with French West Africa? I do know that there are a lot of English-speaking people in French West Africa, but, like, I don't want to go to Senegal and, like, want a program, like, in English. Like, I just think that's offensive to them, right? And so I think that for us, it's a resources and a capacity issue, but definitely something that I think is, you know, close to our hearts and something that, you know, we really want to think about. And not just Francophone Africa, but, you know, also, for example, like all the Arabic-speaking countries.
Right.
We definitely want to make sure that we're providing something that is comprehensive. But I think that it's just kind of a staging issue for us. So kind of, you know, at what stage and kind of when are we ready in this organization to like make that jump?
Gotcha.
But, you know, my co-founder, we were speaking yesterday and she's like, yo, I got to start taking French lessons. And I was like, you really do?
No, French is definitely a useful tool. Thank you, mom and dad, for letting
me. Yeah.
My God.
Well, I should say then no thanks to my mom and dad, I guess.
So where are you from originally? Let's talk about you and your co-founder. Where are you from originally?
I'm from Nigeria.
Okay.
My mom is from Ghana, so let me represent my Ghana people. My dad's from Nigeria, my mom's from Ghana. Grew up in Nigeria until I was 10. Then I was at boarding school in England for about 8 years. Then went to the accent. Exactly, yeah. But then went to university in the States, hence the confused accent. was at McKinsey for 2 years, which is where I met my co-founder. And then launched She Leads Africa. And I'm also like balancing it with being at grad school at the moment.
So being from Africa, Nigeria and Ghana, to be exact, and then traveling to the US and then traveling to the UK. Did you always know that you wanted to do some sort of work that would impact women and girls in Africa? Or were you confused at a certain point and it just kind of the idea came to you one day?
Yeah, no, not at all. I was like, I guess I was like a mean kid. I was like one of those people who like, I didn't understand. I always was like, thought women were complaining, you know, because when you're young, you have so much hubris. And I was just like, stop complaining. Like, we have equality now. I was like one of those people. I was like, stop complaining. Do your work. If you do your work, people will notice you. Like, what is all this like issue? This whole like feminist. I was like, stop being crazy, angry women. Mm. Right. And then like I entered the workforce and I was like, damn, like
this shit is real.
Exactly. I was like, this is not a joke. Like, I finally saw what people were talking about. And I mean, and sometimes you'd be in like client meetings and people kind of wouldn't be like, who are you, please, small girl, just to the left, right? Or you'd be in an organization and people would be like hitting on you, or, you know, you'd realize that, because I mean, at least those are like the kind of, you know, shady or the pernicious, like people are actually being misogynistic. But it would even be things like, okay, all my guy friends, like they would get together over like beers and, you know, suya, which is like this beef thing we eat in Nigeria, and they'd be talking about deals, and all these conversations about like business and getting people together would be happening in these very casual environments, or it'd be late at night when they would be, you know, going to, you know, this older guy's house.
Right.
And just some of these places whereby if you're a woman, like, you didn't even get access. Like, I didn't even hear about this contract to know that I could apply for it, right? Like, you just weren't in the conversation. And just because, like, so much of business can be, I think, casual and informal, and oftentimes in a way where it can be very, I think, uncomfortable for a young woman. You know, my dad...
Brodios. We call those brodios.
Exactly, exactly, you know. And so you then realize that, like, there's some stuff where it is just sexist and it's misogynistic, but then there's some stuff where it's very formal, and I don't think that guys sometimes are on purpose locking women out of these opportunities, but it just kind of happens that way.
Right.
And you do start realizing, like, wow, there are all these kind of systemic issues that make it just that little bit harder for, like, women to, like, break through or to, like, really reach their true potential. And so that's when I started thinking, okay, wow, like, this is like a thing that, like, I think I'd be interested in.
Yeah.
And I ran into like my co-founder. We worked together at McKinsey, but it was like very like, you know, like work friends. Like, I would never hang out with you outside of work. But, like,
I don't want to see your face after 5 p.m.
Exactly. Like, don't call me. You don't know me. I don't know you. And I ran into her at a conference, like a women in enterprise, you know, conference, something started by this lady called Dee Poku. Mm. And she was volunteering there. And I was like, oh, wow, like, I wish you'd have, you know, told me about this, because I'm trying to, like, get more into this space. Like, I don't know where I want to play. And we started talking, and she was like, well, I've kind of had this idea for, like, this pitch competition, but really focused on, like, bomb African women, like women who are doing dope stuff, like women who I'm like, you're about to blow up. And she was like, I've been doing it, like thinking about it for like a year, but I just really haven't like been able to, like, I haven't had like the time or the mental space to really put it together. And I was like, dope, like, I'm in, like, let's get started. Like, let's just do this. Let's try it out. Let's see whether or not this is something else that other women like us are feeling.
Right.
And yeah, we pulled the thing together. I think it was like in 8 weeks or something, like super crazy, like very short timeline. And after the first pitch competition, it was like covered in like Forbes, like we got like all this attention, like people would be emailing us being like, okay, so how do I join? And I'm like, oh, this isn't a real organization, by the way. Like,
yeah, you know,
there is nothing to join. You know, and people are just like, yo, I love the fact that you guys are just, you know, you have these African women who are doing cool things in tech, in fashion tech, in building these like businesses, like you have to continue doing more. And that's kind of then how we were like, okay, cool. Like, damn, like, let's actually start an organization around this, because it was really just meant to be this thing we do on the side. Like, oh, once a year I do my pitch competition. I feel like I've done something good for the world.
No, end up blowing up, you know, like.
Exactly.
For me, if I'm Googling it, She Leads Africa, I was like, S-H-E-L. It was like, She Leads Africa. Google just automatically knew what I was talking about. So you guys have definitely made an impact. One of the things that I saw that was really interesting is kind of, I guess it's a blog section on your website, and a lot of different people talking about some of the challenges they face or just giving really, really dope advice. One of the articles I read was about finding, I guess, the proper mate, someone who will kind of support you when you're doing well.
Is that the Swag Assist article?
it's the Your Boo Your Woe. It's
Okay, got it. Yeah.
I mean, do you see that a lot? Where you know, a lot of what dictates a successful woman's career is the potentially the relationship she's in, and it can either propel it or stop it. Have you seen that in kind of the work that you've been doing with women across the continent?
Definitely, 100%. I mean, not just from them, but even like my own personal life. Like, it was interesting. So there's a lady called Bola Adeshola, who she is the CEO of Standard Chartered, mm-hmm. In Nigeria. And, you know, it was at the same conference. It's like everything just existed, came out of this conference where I ran into my co-founder. And she said, you know, you have to align your partner with your ambition, right? Because if you're like a woman and you're a hustle, like you have to be dating a guy who, if you have kids, like, well, first of all, he has to be comfortable and happy, you know, with you being around mainly guys like all the time, because mm-hmm. like so much of business is held by guys. Like, he has to be someone who's very comfortable with that. You know, number two, if you have kids, he has to be comfortable, you know, doing some of the housework. Sometimes you're going to have to cook. Sometimes you're going to have to change some nappies. Like, right? You have to be the guy who is comfortable with that. And, like, even more so from the, okay, he's going to be helping you hold stuff down. Like, you have to be with a partner who's going to push you. Like, what I see sometimes is a lot of guys who, they see their girlfriends or their wives' careers or businesses are, like, hobbies. They're like, oh, she's doing her little, like, cute, you know, like, you know, shop, like, oh, babe, sweet, 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 like, so cute, keep going, adorable. whereas, like, you want someone who's going to, like, push you and be like, you know, when you want to give up and you're like, this is so hard, and they're going to be like, get up off your ass, like, keep working, keep hustling, yeah. Like, keep going, like, someone who's going to be, like, your promoter. Like, I mean, I think that even, for example, the guy I'm dating now, like, he will always, like, when he sees cool stuff, he'll be like, yo, SLA, you guys should definitely do this. Or when I whine and complain, he's like, no, like, he's like, stop complaining. Like, of course it's going to be hard. Like, just get up and, like, keep working. And you need someone like that, because, like, building a business or, like, a career, it's so difficult that if you have someone who gives you all these excuses to give up, you will.
Right.
But I think that when you have that partner who's really, like, aligned with making you, like, the best woman that you can be, the best businesswoman you can be, the best professional you can be, it is such an, I think, invaluable asset that, you know, it's just, like, I think it's one of, I mean, I hear older women speak all the time, and so many of them will say that, you know, your choice of partner has such a huge impact. I mean, if you decide to have one, you could also be single, which is, like, yo, go you.
Right, of course.
Your choice of partner can be such kind of an important part of your career. They can really propel it, or they can really ruin it, right? You know, I hear about some women who it's like their boyfriends or husbands are not supportive. They're like, well, why are you going around doing all this stuff? And so it's like you're fighting outside and then you come back and you're fighting at home, and it's just so exhausting. Toxic. You know? Exactly.
Yeah. No, I mean, my girlfriend, she decided to move to Kenya, and here I am recording this podcast from Kenya. And,
yeah. You
know, I also think that in supporting, vice versa, men, in supporting your girlfriend or supporting your boyfriend can also present opportunities for you, which you would never known. So I definitely agree with you that kind of that positive reinforcement is everything. Another question I have is, so back to the She Hive, how do you guys pick the different cities that you do this in? You know, again, in looking at the some of the blogs, I see you have some entrepreneurs from Malawi. You have mm-hmm. some, of course, from Nigeria. But how do you guys go about picking a city? Like, mm-hmm. we're going to go here and pitch this. I see New York. What's the kind of the
the thought process?
Exactly.
Yeah. So I think that for us, it tends to be where we have the largest number of communities from, right? So, I mean, now, you know, between Instagram, Google Analytics, you know, or MailChimp, which is what we use for our newsletter listserv, you have a pretty good understanding of where you have the highest numbers of community members. And so I think that, you know, we actually never thought about doing stuff in the diaspora. And then the analytics showed us that about 35% of our community is actually in the diaspora, split between, like, the US and the UK. And so that's why we were like, well, okay, we definitely need to go there. And then, of course, like, the other big hotspots for us were Nigeria, Ghana, Kenya and South Africa. So it made sense to start there. Now, that said, like, I do think that, because oftentimes there can be a little bit of, I don't know if the word is like confirmation bias, but it's that, I mean, because, you know, we're from Nigeria, Ghana, I had at McKinsey done work in South Africa, done work in Kenya. So when we first started, a lot of the articles and the people we were, you know, reaching out to tended to be from those countries. So a lot of our content at first tended to be from those countries. So, of course, you will have the biggest communities from those countries. And so that's why I think that, you know, we've also said, okay, yes, this is where we want to start. But now we're kind of making a real effort to actually be like, okay, well, let's try and find, as you said, the entrepreneurs from Malawi, because it's only when we start writing about them that more young women in Malawi will be coming to, you know, will be joining our community, will be coming to the She Leads Africa page. Mm. And then we'll say, okay, yes, we have, you know, community that's large enough there that we can do something in person there. And I think that also from like and it's unfortunate, but from like a funding perspective. So we generally, I mean, you know, ticket sales do cover some of the costs.
Right.
But the big chunk comes from sponsors. And a lot of the times, I mean, so we've worked with, you know, L'Oreal, we've worked with, you know, Facebook, we've worked with Diageo. And a lot of the times, you know, they are focused on particular countries. So, you know, that's where we have to go first. And so I think that, you know, we will definitely use that to kind of build up a base. But I think once we have, I think, enough resources by ourselves to, like, you know, go to Botswana or go to Zimbabwe, then we will definitely be hungry and eager to do that.
Very cool. So one of the things I saw was that SLA, She Leads Africa, you guys have identified, as you say, four key barriers that really, you know, provide real hurdles for African women, mm-hmm. as they try to participate in, you know, in Africa's growth. And the four you mentioned were unequal access to education, limited mm-hmm. access to financing, constraining cultural stereotypes, and limited opportunities to develop useful networks. You talked a little bit about one of them, kind of the limited opportunities to develop networks. Mm-hmm. But out of the four, which one do you kind of see that rears its ugly head the most?
Wow. It's so, I don't know. I don't know, because they're all so connected.
Right.
And I'll explain to you how. Because, okay, so the education piece, I actually don't mean like formal education. Mm. I think that now, like, you actually see that you'll go to some African countries and you go to university, and you actually see that sometimes you actually have more women in universities than guys. What I actually more meant was work education. So what I found on the continent is that you tend to see women over-concentrated in certain functions. So you see like a lot of women in like HR and in comms, and you tend to see more guys in like sales, you know, business development. Now, from a professional perspective, like, I can't remember the last time when I found that the CEO of a company had previously been the head of HR, right?
Right.
It was usually someone in like a sales function, because you're generating revenues and that is what a lot of companies will value and promote, right? So if you find that there are fewer women in those, like, you know, spaces, like, there are just fewer of them to potentially get those promotions. From like an entrepreneurial perspective, you'll find that you don't necessarily develop, I mean, there's a lot of the skills that it takes to be an entrepreneur. It's a lot of sales, it's a lot of business development, it's a lot of going out there and hustling. And if you've been in biz dev or you've been in sales, like, you're just better equipped, like, to, in terms of like having the skill set, because like you've just been trained in it and work to like start, I think, a really successful and scalable business.
Mm.
And then you'll also find, like, you know, more men will tend to go into, you know, finance, you know, consulting. I'm like, hey, like, when you're going out to raise money for your business, like, if you're a guy and you've been in finance for like 10 years, you just know more investors, right? So like, you just have a bigger rolodex of investors. So like, the education piece is very, very linked, right, to the networking piece, because so much of like your professional network is defined by, you know, what industry you've worked in, within the industry, kind of what function you've worked in. And so they're very, very linked, right? And then it will also, of course, be the stereotype issue, because, I mean, the fact that these two things, like networks and, you know, education, have been coming together just means that you've had more successful men that people can point out to. So you find that, I think that oftentimes, I think women, we put like a barrier, like, we put like our ceiling even below what the glass ceiling is. I was talking to an entrepreneur in Kenya, you know, once, and she makes, you know, ceramic filters, you know, very important, very needed. And we said to her, okay, where do you see yourself in 5 years? And she was like, well, in 5 years, like, I want to be selling outside of Nairobi. And we were just like, well, what do you mean outside of Nairobi? Like, in 5 years, like, you should be in Uganda, you should be in Tanzania, yeah, you should be Bali, like, you should be regional.
And reach for the stars, kind of.
Exactly. And her attitude was like, oh, yeah, well, I mean, I looked at my, you know, aunt and, you know, my mom, and just most of them, their businesses are in Kenya. So I just never thought to scale, right? Whereas I think that as guys, like, guys tend to have way more role models in terms of people who they can look up to and be like, oh, this guy did this, and so I can do this. Mm. And I think that people should never underestimate the importance of confidence when it comes to, like, building a business or building a career. Like, what you think you can achieve so much defines what you actually end up achieving.
Very true.
So it's very hard for me to say which is, because as you see, like, they all flow into each other and they're all so, like, interconnected.
Very true. And something you said in terms of if someone has more of a sales background, you just tend to make those connections with people in sales, and all of your networks are there. I mean, I invite everyone to take a look at their LinkedIn profile and see the type of people that are, you know, who their connections are, and you'll probably see that they all do similar things. It's hard for it to make that diverse. Who have been some of the inspirations, I mean, past and present, for you to start something like this? And what's in store for SLA down the line? Where do you see it going in 5 years?
Yeah. Inspirations. Right now, like, I'm really feeling Oprah. I know everyone's like, duh. But I just think that, yeah. I mean, as we think about, I think it's somewhat linked to where I see SLA growing, but I think that what she's done in terms of kind of building a media company, starting from a show, then going onto the Oprah Winfrey Network. And you remember when the Oprah Winfrey Network first came out, like, it wasn't that hot. It wasn't doing that well. And, like, recently, like, they've started coming up with really cool shows where they're really talking about issues that matter. I mean, they have one called, they've got one called Greenleaf, mm-hmm. Where, like, they touch on, I mean, they touch on rape, they touch on family issues, they touch on homosexuality, like, just so many different things, and kind of how she's been able to transition from that one show into then doing so much of programming. And the fact that you could tell that it was difficult at first, like, even as successful as she was when she just had the Oprah show, right? She was still learning and still getting better. And I think that that was, I think, so amazing and so inspirational to me. I would also say that I think that, you know, at SLA, we're building on trends and a lot of footwork that, like, or legwork that people have done. Mm. So even if you think about, I mean, there's, like, a really popular blog in Nigeria called Bella Niger, which, I mean, she, I think now, it was started by a young lady called Uche Pedro. They used to do, like, a lot of, started off just doing weddings, like, showing events and weddings in Nigeria, and has just grown from there. And I think she got a lot of people more used to blog culture and people going online and reading stuff and getting their news that way. And I think that then makes it much easier for new entrants like us, for people to then come onto our platforms. Or even if you think about organizations like in Nigeria, like, you know, WIMBIZ or WISCAR, which are really talking about, you know, professional women. And I think, you know, we definitely have stood on the shoulders of people who have put in a lot of ground and legwork, getting people more comfortable to this idea of women in business, or, you know, getting your content from the internet or learning from the internet. So I think that it's really great to see that, you know, I don't think that we just came out of nowhere. Right. If a lot of those people hadn't put in the groundwork, it would have been, I think, much more difficult, you know, for an organization like us.
This has been really great, Yasmin. Thank you so much. I want to give you the opportunity to give me all of your hits on Twitter, your website, if you could share with everybody.
Yes, everything is just She Leads Africa. So, you know, we're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, She Leads Africa. And then our website is sheleadsafrica.org. And I think, kind of, you know, long term, you know, we're really excited to think about, you know, on the offline event side, you know, the She Hives are great, but I think we also want to think about, well, how do we scale down? So do smaller, maybe 3-hour masterclasses. And how do we scale up? thinking about much bigger like festivals. Like I love things like the Essence Festival or South by Southwest, and I would love to kind of bring all those inspirations together and do something that's kind of really focused on putting African women at the forefront of, you know, technology and innovation. In the digital media space, I think, you know, we'll want to continue innovating in terms of kind of how we think about educating our audience. So we would love to do more stuff with video. You know, we would love to do more stuff with downloadable guides. I'm really following the trends that are going on with kind of edgy tech and online education, and thinking about how we can integrate some of those lessons into what we do. And also thinking about media, like, I think very broadly, because I think it's great to give people skills, but I'm also like, well, you know, why can't we, you know, launch our own, you know, mini TV shows? Like, you know, fiction can also be important, right? So much of how I think we see and perceive ourselves is defined by the people we watch on TV, or, you know, the TV shows we watch.
Yeah.
And I think we would also love to kind of start playing in that space as well. So, you know, the goal is definitely very expansive. And so I think that we have to do a lot of work to make sure that it actually comes to fruition.
I think with more groups like She Leads Africa, that is a very feasible goal. Again, in learning more about you guys, it's been really inspirational, and I'm glad that we could have this chat. Where is the next city do you think you guys are going to head to?
So we're going to Lagos, it's about 3 weeks away now, and then Johannesburg about a month after that.
Okay.
Then we'll sit and regroup and think about, you know, what we do for 2017.
Cool. I'll be in Joburg in about a month, so hopefully we
can all fantastic. Yeah, I'll definitely keep in touch.
For sure. Yasmin, thank you. It's been a great pleasure.
Thanks for having me, and, you know, shout out to your girlfriend being dope and crushing it in Nairobi.
Yeah, shout out to her. Shout out to y'all as well.
Hey, yo, my man Fife Diggy, he got something to say.
I like them brown, yellow, Puerto Rican, and Haitian. Name is Fife Dog from the Zulu Nation. So you're in the jam that we can get down. Now let's knock the boots like the group H.